and welcome to Newsmakers on CHCH Podcast. I'm your host, Louis Butko, and today I'm very pleased to be joined by the Minister of Energy and Natural Resources, the Honorable Jonathan Wilkinson. Mr. Wilkinson was first elected as a Member of Parliament for North Vancouver in 2015 after more than two decades in the private sector, including leadership roles with green technology companies. He was appointed to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's cabinet in 2018 and has served as Minister of Fisheries, Oceans and the Canadian Coast Guard, as well as Minister of the Environment and Climate Change, and very pleased to be joined with the Minister in studio today. And I want to start there because Minister of Climate Change, Minister of the Environment, and then to Minister of Natural Resources and Energy, it seems like they're conflicting roles. How did you handle that transition, and why were you the right person for that role at the time?
Well, I think if you looked historically, you probably would say they were conflicting roles. It's often been the case in federal cabinets that the Minister of the Environment and the Minister of Natural Resources are kind of at odds. I would say that's different in the cabinet that exists today. And it's different because I think the energy transition presents some real economic opportunities. We need to reduce carbon emissions, but we actually can seize the economic opportunities. And I think I was the right person for that. I spent almost 20 years running clean tech companies in energy, in mining, in an element of forestry. And so I've got a background in all of those industries, but I also worked in fighting carbon emissions. And so it's kind of a nice balance.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what brings you into town today. What are you doing here?
I'm doing a number of things here. I'm actually going to McMaster to see the nuclear reactor and to talk to a number of graduate students about the work that's being done on nuclear energy and isotopes and a number of other things at McMaster. I'm going to CanMet Labs, which is one of the labs for Natural Resources Canada, which was moved from Ottawa to here a number of years ago. They do enormous amounts of work on materials and metals for transportation, for energy. And so I'm going to talk to the scientists within my department about a lot of the things that they're doing. And then I'm doing a labor roundtable to talk about the sustainable jobs. How do we create sustainable jobs for the future that are going to bring prosperity to these communities?
How do we create sustainable jobs? To put you on the spot here, in this changing world and with climate change and the adjustments that need to be made, how can we make sustainable jobs here in Hamilton, do you find?
Well, I think each province and territory will have different opportunities in the context of moving to a low-carbon future, but each province and territory have significant opportunities to create new jobs and wealth, some of them using exactly the same skill sets that we have today. Here in Ontario, I mean, some of the things that I think are most top of mind would be nuclear technology, and that's for deployment domestically, but it's also for export, and that's nuclear skills and technology. The work that's being done at Darlington, the work that's being done at Bruce, the work that's being done here at McMaster. I would say that certainly electric vehicles and battery manufacturing, but also the upstream mining of critical minerals is a huge opportunity for Ontario. And I think there are a whole range of others, hydrogen, et cetera, et cetera. So
let's jump into some of the things you just talked about there, the nuclear projects. Last week you told Reuters you plan on expediting the approval process for new projects, but you won't exclude them from federal environmental review. Why not make the exemptions for these projects if they can help produce energy more efficiently?
Well, look, all of these projects do have to go through some approval. What Ontario and some other provinces have been saying is they would prefer that to be done by the Canadian Nuclear Regulator rather than by the Impact Assessment Agency. And what we have said is we are open to the intent of that. We don't want to go back and rewrite legislation and take 3 years of consultation. I don't think anybody wants to do that. Mm-hmm. But we are looking to address the intent of what Minister Smith here in Ontario has asked us to do. And I think we can move in that direction. And I think everybody can be happy about that. At the end of the day, we want to make sure these projects are assessed in terms of their environmental impacts, assessed in terms of their work with Indigenous communities and the consultation with those. But we all want to see an expedited process.
You mentioned electric vehicles. That's a big part of getting to net zero. Yesterday, while speaking at an event, a U.S. Energy Secretary, your equivalent down there in the U.S., Jennifer Granholm, said she was concerned about China, what she called bigfooting the market, flooding the market with cheaper options. This comes as you recently raised concerns about slumping prices for minerals. How worrying is this for that sector, and what more can your government do? You've invested $30 billion in this market. What more can you do, and how concerned are you about some of these issues?
Well, I am concerned, and Secretary Granholm and I have spoken about this on a number of occasions. We were together at some international meetings just a month ago and had these conversations. I am very concerned. You know, if you think about the the chain. It starts with mining, and then it is processing of minerals, and then it is the manufacturing of batteries, and then ultimately it is the manufacturing and sale of electric vehicles. In terms of mining, we have all in the Western world, I think, been lax in terms of some of the rules. I think we are increasingly of the view that we cannot be in the position going forward that Germany found itself in with the dependence on Russian natural gas. Right now, there is too much concentration of minerals and minerals processing in China. And so the government of Canada has made it very clear that we do not welcome investments in critical minerals from Chinese state-owned enterprises, that we are not interested in China owning our processing, that we want to do a lot of this domestically. We are working not just here, but with Australia and in Chile and a number of other countries to do that. The same thing holds true with batteries and electric vehicles. Like, we want to make sure that we have a diversity of supply so that China does not simply dominate the market. That's not good for anybody.
Now, you singled out, and Jennifer Granholm did this as well, Indonesia and the nickel market in Indonesia. And, you know, they're not concerned really about their carbon footprint, much like China is not. So when you talk about your zero emissions plan and the roadmap for decarbonization, how can we stay competitive in that sector when other countries are not as aggressive in their environmental goals?
It's a great question. And in Indonesia, the bulk of the nickel production is actually being done by Chinese-owned enterprises. Vale is also there. Vale is in Canada, and their carbon footprint and their ESG is far better than Chinese-mined nickel. We're not going to compete with China on the basis of eliminating environmental standards, eliminating labor standards. Like, that's just not something that Canadians would accept, nor would Australians, nor would Chileans. What we need to do is ensure that there is a way for ESG minerals to be acknowledged, and that somehow that commitment is reflected in the price or reflected in the requirements to purchase. That is a conversation that is very actively ongoing with us, with the Americans, Australians, the Chileans, the Europeans. At the end of the day, it is self-defeating if we buy high-carbon nickel from Indonesia to make batteries in Canada. It makes no sense. So at the end of the day, we have to be thoughtful. We have to work with our democratic allies with whom we share common values. It doesn't mean we are not going to do trade with China going forward, but we have to be eyes wide open.
Let's talk about Saskatchewan. Last week, the provincial government said they do not intend to pay the federal carbon price levy that it owes Ottawa. They're accusing the federal government of treating them like second-class citizens. What are the next steps here? Are there legal options on the table for you and your government?
Well, look, let me start by saying I grew up in Saskatchewan. I used to work for a former distinguished premier of Saskatchewan. I know the province very well. I find it shocking that the province that gave us the gifts of Tommy Douglas and Medicare, Alan Blakeney, Roy Romano, has a premier right now that essentially is telling people that it's okay to break the law. That is simply unacceptable in this country, in any law-abiding, rules-based country. I think it's enormously disappointing. I don't understand how Scott Moe thinks that people in Saskatchewan should abide by the laws that he passes if he decides that he's going to thumb his nose at laws that are duly passed by the Parliament of Canada. At the end of the day, there have to be consequences. Certainly, some of the consequences are that people who actually live on modest incomes get far more money back in the rebate. So Scott Moe is making poor people poorer. But there will have to be consequences. We are in the process of sorting through what those are, but it can't be the case that provinces simply decide which laws they're going to abide by and which they're not.
The leader of the opposition is campaigning on axe the tax. Why is that a bad idea? To axe the tax?
Well, I would say, and I do admit that we're going to have to probably be better at communicating on this issue, but the price on pollution, or as he calls it, the carbon tax, is about fighting climate change. It is the most efficient economic way to actually address carbon emissions, and it is effective in reducing carbon emissions. But we designed it in a way where all of the money that's collected goes back to within the province where it's collected, and it goes back in the form of rebates. And those rebates are structured in a way where 80% of Canadian families get more money back. That's just true. And the University of Calgary just published a study on that. The University of Regina just published a study on that. And people who live on the most modest incomes are the ones that benefit the most. It's actually an affordability measure. It's only people who actually have a 6,000 square foot house, drive a Hummer, and have a boat in their backyard that are paying more. And you know what? They're emitting more carbon. They should pay more.
Yeah. You mentioned it's a communication thing. Why do you feel like that's not hammering home? That 80%, the studies can be done, but that 80% number, it feels like that's a majority of Canadians, very clearly, a super majority of Canadians. Why isn't that messaging sticking?
Well, I think there's probably a number of reasons. I mean, some of it is just mechanical. Like the rebates are not very visible to people. Often they just go into people's account. They don't even know what they are. When you looked at checks even that some people receive, you couldn't figure out what it was that they were actually getting and where it was coming from. So we're trying to actually address that. As you know, we rebranded the charge or the rebate. Mm-hmm. And we are trying to find ways to make it more visible to people so that they see that they're actually getting the rebate and they can actually look at what they're paying versus what they're receiving.
Minister Wilkinson, I know you're very, very busy today. You got a lot of stops you're making. We are very grateful that CHCH was one of them. Thank you for making the time for us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. My thanks to the Honorable Jonathan Wilkinson for joining me today. And my thanks to you as well. Thanks to Mike Corson for directing today's show. Remember, you can like and subscribe to CHCH Podcast so you never miss an episode of this show or any of the other shows we have for you here. One more time, thank you for joining us. And from all of us here at CHCH, have a great day.